Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
A Grey's Anatomy podcast.
I'm Abby.
I'm Bree, and it's a beautiful day to podcast.
I, for a second, thought I was armchair expert. Welcome, welcome, welcome to armchair expert.
I'm Dan Rathers.
And I'm Minica Mouse. Wouldn't that throw someone off if we played that intro? Like, people would be like, what the? I thought I hit the call room. And then they would panic and have a crisis.
I think we would probably get in trouble, but maybe Monica Monsoon and Dan Rathers would pick us up and interview
welcome,
us.
Welcome, welcome. Can you go as low as Dax can?
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Ooh, that was good. That was a good one. If this is your first time listening to us, we are a Grey's Anatomy podcast deep diving every single episode of Grey's. We are currently in season 11, episodes 7 and 8. We also did a few episodes about season 17, the most current one in the day we are recording today. So make sure if you haven't checked those out and you want to know our thoughts, you can do that. This is a spoiler podcast. We definitely don't alert you very accurately when we're about to spoil something that's about to happen. So make sure you've watched all the episodes before listening to us. And
if you care.
What else? Yeah, if you care. What else are we?
We are just two gals here having a good time talking about Grey's Anatomy. We love to just run down this. We'll do it real fast. If you want to support the podcast, there's a couple different ways you can do that. You can become a patron at www.patreon.com/theoncallroom. It's also in our show notes. There you can pledge to be an intern, resident, or attending. That's $2, $5, or $10, and you get different benefits. If you're an intern, you can be a part of our Facebook group. If you are a resident, you get bonus episodes. And if you're an attending, you can co-host. You get the podcast a day early. And you also get something called post-op, where we talk for an extra 5 to 10 minutes once we call time of death. This week's post-op topic is about the Callie and Owen storyline. We've kind of shifted our post-op topic to be a little bit more like main character storylines. So if that's a really important storyline to you and you really want to hear our thoughts on it, head over to Patreon, become an attending. And you will get that. You'll also get all of our previous post-op.
They live there forever.
Right.
And all the bonus episodes are there too. So it's not like you are just going to start getting them. You'll get access to all of those previous ones. I just wanted to say too, the Callie and Owen storyline is specifically about their veteran project with the robotic limbs, in case you didn't actually watch the episode and you just want us to explain everything to you. So that's what
we're
it
here
is.
For it.
We are. And you can also follow us on Instagram at The On Call Room Pod. And as always, please leave us a review on iTunes, 5 stars, 5 scalpels. If you have any thoughts about what you'd like to have us talk about on the podcast, one great way to do that is to become an intern and then you get access to the Facebook group. Another way is to send us an email at theoncallroom@gmail.com. We love to hear thoughts and suggestions, and we just want to be the best we can for y'all. So please get in contact with us. And as always, you can support Bree by following her on Instagram at BJ Babs.
Thank you so much. And I'm not even going to give Abby's Insta handle because she has too many followers. So
do you have a new goal?
Oh yeah. 1,000.
Okay. Perfect.
So really looking to get there sooner than later.
I feel like you're going to have that though. And then be like, I don't want all these people following me.
Yeah, I don't even really post that much shit. To be completely honest, I'm kind of boring to follow. Sometimes I'll like repost other people's funny memes, but like, I used to be really big on like posting things that like on my story, you know, because Instagram has, you know, moved towards stories rather than posts, about like things in my life. But I've found that my life isn't that exciting anymore through COVID. So I'm really not posting me and Marge laying on the couch watching Parenthood.
That makes me sad because I would like to see your stories, like me as your close friend. Or perhaps could you make like a close friends section?
I do have a close friend section. So you know what? Follow me, message me you want to be in my close friends, and then you'll see my intimate details of my life, like me laying on the couch watching Parenthood.
I would like to see you and Marge on your lunch break, like just Jay chilling. Also, where are you at in your Parenthood rewatch?
Dude, I'm in season 5. Joel and Julia, spoiler alert, are about to like break things off for a while. Mm. Like we're really deep. And then Ryan just like, it's going back into the army.
Wait, who's Ryan?
Maya Whitman's, I can't remember her character's name. Her like fiance.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. So many characters. I'm trying to think if I'm watching anything. I mean, we're in Schitt's Creek, which Schitt's Creek update. I'm definitely like we're in season 2, deep into season 2. I'm loving it more than my initial like, you know, watching. I feel like it's so cliche for David to be my favorite, but obviously he is. And I really love Stevie.
Oh, Stevie's fantastic.
Like I love her sarcasm and her dryness. Like I wish that I was that person, but I'm not, you know?
Yeah. I mean, David is great. I think Moira's my favorite, and Johnny Rose is definitely my fiance, John, and I am definitely Moira. So if I could be anyone on that show, I am her crying in a closet. So,
Jake just said that he is annoyed by her, and I was like, well, I think you're supposed to be. Like, I don't like they're not annoying people. Like, that's the point,
right? But they do have beautiful character growth and arcs.
Yes.
And so, yeah. I have a couple things to say. None of it's important. Oh. You ready for it?
Go for it.
Number one, I bought those, and I texted you this, those stick-on nail things. And I just want to give a shout-out to them.
Stick-on nails?
They're not nails, but they're like stick-on nail polish. And so that you can buy them in different designs. And I got sparkle ones. So it's like the sparkle starts like a quarter way through my nails. So it looks like I went and got my nails done. I'm not like great at putting them on yet, but supposedly they're supposed to last for 2 weeks. They last night didn't feel super durable. I was like, okay, 2 weeks. But this morning I showered. I've been working all day. I've been kind of playing with them, you know, like kind of picking at them.
Yeah.
And they're not going anywhere. So I think it was actually a patient of mine had some on, and I was like, wow, your nails are really pretty. And then she told me, it was kind of like, you know, like Young Living, she had ordered some from someone, but then I saw them at Target and I was like, oh, like I don't have to like order these from like a pyramid scheme. I can just like buy them at Target. And she said they're actually really nice for, you can buy just clear ones for protecting your nails from how often we're washing our hands right now, because her nails were splitting so bad. And so she just bought clear ones to put on, and they were like keeping her nails strong. And so I highly recommend them at this point. I will touch base
and wait. Off?
You just put a drop of like a nail polish remover on them, and then you like lift them and pull them off.
Whoa. I'd have to try that, because I don't like painting my nails because I don't like that it comes off. Like, well, I don't like getting shellac because I don't like that I have to go again. I just think the art, sitting and getting my nails done is like I don't like it. I like a pedicure, but I don't like getting my nails done. And so, but I like when my nails look pretty, but I don't know. I'm just destined to have
but
sad
they
hands.
Look really pretty. And like, I cut them really short. Like, so like, I don't know, almost to try and keep them on longer or something. And I don't know. I think they're really funky and fun. They're this like pretty silver glitter. And then it came with also this like pale pink one with a cool design. Now, see, I haven't done like a color yet. And I feel like that would look worse if you fuck up putting them on, you know? When you just do glitter.
Do you cut them to fit your nail?
Yeah. So you put them on and they're like pretty long, so they can obviously go on like any length nail. Yep. And then you cut them and then you take, it comes with like a file and you push them over and then you file them like to your nail.
Got it.
It kind of took me a while. They like recommended using tweezers. I didn't. So it's like some of it's on my skin. I'm like, I'm not there yet. I'm not great yet, but they're really fun. And it was something like I laid in bed. I was watching Parenthood. It was a Sunday night and it was just something fun to do. And then I could go to bed because they're dry.
Right.
You know, and I didn't have to worry about smudging my nails up, because even if you wait for 4 hours, you still somehow have a ding in your nail, even if you sit in complete stillness for 4 hours.
Well, I have, speaking of hands and going to bed at night, I have either a ghost living in my bedroom or more likely my skin is really dry and keeps like cracking, but it's like cuts, or I'm cutting myself when I'm cooking and I'm not realizing until like the next day. But I have four like very tiny like nicks. It's almost like one's like a crack and then it's open. Then on my knuckle, there's like, you know, when you like brush your knuckle against like cement in it, like mm-hmm. I have four tiny little wounds on my hands that I wake up with.
Is it McCoy or Jake? It's Jake cutting your knuckles.
Tiny scalpel. And he's opening a tiny, tiny skin flap.
Things are really weird.
I did wake up to him the other day though. I was like, we were not sleeping or like awake, but like our heads were really close and my hands were up by my face, and he touches my hand and he goes, "That's a really nice vein." Because he knows how to do, what are they called? Not shots.
IVs.
IVs. Yeah. And so I was like, you are so creepy.
Yeah. That is a pretty creepy thing to wake up to. I'd be like, shut the fuck up about my veins. Thank you.
Actually, I feel very like flattered. I'm like, thank you. I do have nice veins. But then I'm also like, oh yeah, that one's in my hand. It's because I'm getting older and my veins are more visible.
Yeah, we are getting older. Just
like my grandma's hands and my mom's and my great, not really my mom's yet, but my like great, I can picture my great grandma's hands, you know, and they were like, the veins were like, you were like, wow, how do they do that?
Yeah, they get real veiny. They get real weird. But
other thing you had to say?
I just have like made some progress on wedding planning, just to update all the listeners. I bought wedding shoes today. Abby knows that.
Great accomplishment.
Yeah. We'll see if I like them. They're coming in the mail soon. I just want to say to anyone planning a wedding out there, I'm there with you. I feel you during COVID. It just sucks. Like all of those things that either your friends or your siblings or like things you've heard of in the past for weddings, like you just don't get to do. So for instance, catering, like no caterers are doing like in-house tasting. So you literally, every caterer I've contacted have been like, we're doing like drive-by pickup thing and you don't get to choose. And like, like you just like have to come home and heat it yourself type thing. And like, honestly, like that's kind of disappointing. Like, I know it's not that big of a deal, but like you talked about on the Zoom call about like you had this catering experience and all this food and stuff. And so it just like, there's COVID just sucks and it sucks planning a wedding, and we've had to shift so many different things. And so I'm just trying to be like, not a brat about it and just like positive or whatever. So we scheduled one. And this one's free. And then the other one we had to pay for, but they're like an hour apart to pick up. And so my parents are going to come to our house. We're just going to pay for the one. And then we're going to like compare and contrast. They both have like a lot of gluten-free options. And so we decided we're going to do both and we're going to make a like thing of it. And so my mom and dad are going to come over next Saturday and we're just going to heat up all this food and like see if we like it or whatever. So it might be to do it in our own home or whatever, but you know, it's still kind of
I know it's not the same. I also think you have to remember, and at least I'm speaking for myself, that a lot of like what, like when I talk about those things, like I think sometimes I romanticize it because it was at this point 6 years ago and it like, it feels like a memory and whatever. And like, was it as great as, do you know what I mean? Like we were alone in a back room of a restaurant. Like we weren't like, so like, it, I just think that like there's, you're making your whole new exciting memories and you know, it's going to be a story to tell and at least you get good food, you know,
hopefully,
and
fingers crossed.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed. Yeah.
Yeah. So I made some progress on that. And then I was planning, oh, I haven't told you this yet, but I was planning on doing like physical save the dates. And then I was going to do like an e-vite for like wedding invitation. Cause I was like, who needs to spend money on that? Well, turns out I found wedding invites that go really well with the save the date. And they're part of a like beholden wedding invite thing. Like,
yep.
And they match really well. They're these beautiful yellows. So my colors I'm going for are like the sunset. So they're like burnt yellows and like mustardy, like kind of, yeah. And so they're two separate, like they're not in the same thing. Like I'm sure you could get a save the date that is very similar to your invite. But anyway, I talked to John about it today and I was like, I've changed my mind. Like I want to get actual wedding invites. And then I think we're just going to do the RSVP online because I'm okay. Also creating a wedding website that I worked
wow,
on.
Wow. Great. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really, really doing,
You're doing it.
Yeah. And so it was fun to kind of get into it a little bit today and be like, okay, we can, well, and also I was like, oh, well, we need like 65 invites. And it was like X amount for these invites. And then tonight when I got home, I was like, I don't need 65 because a lot of the people are couples. So it's actually going to cost right. a lot less than what I had like said was okay for me to spend. So
yeah, I do not, you do not need to send one to me and Jake. Actually, no, you don't even need to send me one if you don't want.
No, I want to send it to you because it's okay, pretty. Good. I'll send you a picture of it later on. So I just wanted to give everyone an update because I was like, oh, we have plenty of time. And I'm like, holy fuck, it's almost February. Like,
yeah, you don't have fun. You're like, but you have time. Plenty is...
Not quite
the word I would use. Yeah.
Not plenty. So yeah. Well, and before you
I'm very
know
excited.
It, we're gonna be married and the day is gonna be over. And it's Abby and Jake are coming over next Saturday to talk about the ceremony. So
heck yeah.
That's crazy.
Also, I don't mean to be a Will, you got me thinking about shoes, and then I was gonna tell the listeners that I've been nonstop looking at what I'm gonna wear to your wedding as if I'm the bride. I'm so excited about it that like, which doesn't make sense because I'm just like a cooler guest. But I just went to look up the dress and it's sold out in my size. So you know what? We don't have time. Everything needs to be done now because time is running out and people are buying this dress that I wanted.
It's really quite true. I mean, I'm not going to say it. The thing that you call out on iPhone whenever I say things sometimes opens. I need to like turn it off on my computer. But I like called the alteration place like thinking like, oh, I bought my dress off the rack. I'm like, it really doesn't need that many alterations. I need to do a couple things to it. And I called them expecting them to be like, oh yeah, bring it in like March or April. And they were like, you need to come in next week. And I was like,
right
oh,
now.
Thank God I called. I had no idea. So
she's bringing her dress in like the week before the wedding. She's like, it's just a couple of things.
It's just a couple of things here and there. Just, yeah. So anyway, weddings, guys. I'm continuing to have nightmares about it. Did I ever tell the dream about the dream I had about our wedding day?
No.
Did I tell you this? Okay. So I had a dream that I'm talking a lot. I had a dream that it was our wedding day and I realized that we had nothing. We had no tables. We had no food. No, like it was like nothing.
That's the classic dream. That's the dream that always happens.
So my mom ordered like a bunch of takeout and got donuts from Meijer for dessert.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm on board.
Putting them out. Whatever. I like went and kind of like saw John, and we like, he opened the door and he looked like really nervous. And I was just like, it's going to be okay. And like, I walked away and I was like, holy fuck, I didn't write my vows. Like I just didn't write my vows. And I was like, well, I'll just wing it. Like, I think I can just get up there and just tell him how I feel. And so then I'm like, down in like everyone's there and it's this hideous place we're at. It's like my house, but it's hideous. And my dress is already bustled. And I'm like, why is my dress bustled? It's not supposed to be bustled yet. And also, why am I downstairs? Because like all of these guests are here and they're seeing me. And all of a sudden down the stairs, John comes down the stairs on a stretcher. Like the paramedics are taking him. He has a colonial shirt on, like one of those big poofy like colonial
like
shirts.
Like what he wore for Halloween when he
Exactly. Yes.
Whatever big, the next name
like
is.
A white poofy, like think Seinfeld, Jerry Seinfeld when he gets that one shirt. And he comes down, his eyes are closed and his arms are like over his chest. And they like turn to me and they're like, he didn't make it. And I was like, what?
Oh my God.
No, but Abby, he didn't die. He just didn't get ready in time. He didn't make it. And the wedding's going to have to be a different day. And they just like took him out on a stretcher. And that was my dream.
Wow. Isn't it so, like, why do our brains manifest that? And also, like, you need to start writing these down. A, because this is great material for your ceremony. Just kidding. But B, because I just think, like, they're going to get weirder. And I want you to be able to look back and remember your fears.
Yeah, the anxiety's weird. I mean, the fact that I had a dream that my fiance, quote, didn't make it, and also was wearing a colonial shirt.
Well, I think the colonial shirt is more telling. I think you are actually concerned about what he's going to wear because he does make his own choices. And I feel like you have a deep-seated fear that he's going to go for a colonial look. And so
he did make a suit on whatever website the other day and he showed it to me and it was very nice. I was like, it was navy. He's going to get like a waistcoat thing. I was like, that looks very lovely. So I think it's going to be okay. And then he's going to show up day of and it's going to be a poofy colonial shirt after
everything. If you guys were to see each other beforehand, I'm going to give him a colonial shirt to put on to make your dream. And then Jake can wear his EMT thing and carry him out on a stretcher. And you're going to think you're in the Matrix.
I'm going to pass out. And then I'm going to be the one on the stretcher. So please don't do that.
I won't. Oh, goodness. I just had one last thing to share with the listeners that is about my life and is dumb, but it is that I am reading, is it Midnight Sun? I think it's the book. Yeah. It's like the Twilight book, but from Edward's perspective, like the first book only. And it is, well, it's not good literature. I just want to like put that forward. It's also very problematic. Like he is so controlling of her and like, I mean, that's the whole story. That's the romance in it, you know, but like, and you know, they try to explain his, like his reasons why, like it's, he loves her, whatever. But, I am just laughing at myself because even though all of those things I mentioned, not good literature, poor storytelling, super cheesy, kind of not right these days, I am so into it. Like it is such a fun read. And it's like bringing back my like glory years of being in college and going to see those movies at midnight and stuff. It's just really fun. It's just fun to train. I'm like, I'm going to be sad when it's done.
Oh, movies. Can you even? Abby, my sister looked up. We can rent out a movie theater. For 15 people or 20 people or something, and it's $15 a person.
Yeah, we should do it.
But they have to be in like our, but I guess you could spread out and you could all wear masks and like,
yeah.
And it's like kind of in your pod, I guess.
The only thing that's shitty is that they don't have food, which to me, like popcorn is 50% of why I want to go to the theater.
Red wine is the other 50%.
Well, it wasn't Star Wars, but the last memorable movie. Well, so we saw Little Women, but I remember seeing this new Star Wars. And I was wasted.
We drank so much wine. I would be like, do you want one more glass? And we would run to the concession in the middle. Like, I drank like 4 glasses of wine during that movie.
We would take turns running. I think I spent like $100 some at that movie. And then also, I just remember that one time, like, being, all right, should I go? I gotta pee. And like running as fast as I could, because we were at the highest row. Remember, we were as far up as you could get. I was on the end. And like, I was taking 2 steps at a time when you turn the corner and you really hope no one's right there, because you're going to smash into them. And then you hurry and you go to the bathroom and you're peeing as fast as you can. And you hear like Backstreet Boys playing in the background, because it's like weird music in the movie theater bathroom, and you just rush back.
Dude, I did run into someone when I went pee. I came running out of the women's bathroom and a man and I smashed into each other because we were both trying to get to the bathroom really fast. I was like, sorry, oh God, Star Wars, like, because you didn't want to miss anything.
No, that's the worst part about now that I like to drink in movie theaters, because before it wasn't a problem, I could hold it. But if I drink, I know I'm going to have to pee. So I have to pick my time strategically.
Yeah. And you don't know what a strategic time is because you've never seen the movie. Yeah. It's so complicated. You know what? It's better that we don't go to movie theaters anymore. It really is.
I was dropping literally $100 a movie. It is sad though for our town. And then we really should get into this episode. For our town, we got like a sweet new movie theater, like downtown. It's just like a really cool one. It has like a really good restaurant connected to it and a full bar. And it just like made going to the movies feel even more fun. And I feel like we barely got to enjoy it.
Oh yeah. The seats have both heating and cooling options on them. Which is dope. They were recliners, but you could like in the summer put air conditioning on your seat, or in the winter put the heater on. And then shit hit the fan, y'all. Here we all are.
I know. I hate when I tell people, I'm like, yeah, every seat is a recliner. Like, yeah, ours is like that too. I was like, yeah, well, ours wasn't. I had to sit.
It really wasn't. Did you go to Grand Haven 9? Did you even grow up in a small town? You don't even know. You don't even know.
Living in a small town. Is that how that song goes?
Last thing. It's like, that was the best thing they could possibly do, is make recliners, because that didn't happen that long ago. And Jake and I went and saw The Revenant, and and like, I was like, you guys, they have recliners. And at that point, it was only recliners in the first 2 rows. And then now this new one has recliners throughout the whole theater. And
no one's head is in your way. You remember going to movie theaters when like, you'd be like, fuck, I'm behind a tall person. you'd literally not be able to see. Those seats were so small. When we saw The Revenant though, I used to choose the seat right behind the like upper section, because it had that bar and you could put your feet on it. So it's like next to the handicap. I just remember watching Revenant and we were like hiding under your scarf during the scene when the bear was attacking him.
Because a grizzly bear mauled him.
This movies. Is so horrifying.
We're going to do a 10-minute intro. This is 30 minutes later.
I know. Okay. I guess we're going to have to cut some topics. No, just kidding. We'll just do it secretly and no one will know. Okay. So let's just, are you good? Do you want to just get into it?
Oh, no break. We're just going.
Do you want to do a break? We don't have to do a break.
No, I'm fine to go.
Let's do it. Okay. So we are talking about season 11, episode 7 and 8. Could We Start Again, Please? And Risk. I'll read the first one and we'll go back and forth.
Okay.
So the first episode is, secrets about Amelia's past addictions come to light and cause problems for her at the hospital. Bailey oversees Joe's first solo surgery and Arizona must make an executive decision in Dr. Herman's absence. Meanwhile, the doctors spring into action when a couple arrives at the emergency room after escaping a fire.
And then the second one is, Maggie and Meredith disagree with Derek about the best way to approach a patient's case, which leads to a bigger argument between the couple. Meanwhile, Callie feels responsible when one of her veterans is pushed too far and one doctor's routine procedure results in a devastating diagnosis.
The monologue for the first episode is done by Meredith Grey, and it says, "They say life doesn't give you second chances, but we do. Surgeons do. You break a bone, we put it back together. You bleed, we make it stop. You flatline, we resuscitate you. But as much as we give people second chances, surgeons don't usually get them, because the kind of mistakes we make are sometimes impossible to recover from. It's hard to give second chances. It's even harder to ask for them. A chance to do it again, knowing what you know now, what you've learned. a chance to do it completely differently, a chance to right our wrongs, to try and correct our mistakes, a chance to try and start over from scratch. Meredith Gray.
And then Risk. Nobody's memory is perfect or complete. We jumble things up. We lose track of time. We're in one place, then another, and it feels like one long, inescapable moment. It's just like my mother used to say, the carousel never stops turning. Nobody's memory is perfect or complete. We jumble things up. We lose track of time. We're in one place, then another, and it all feels like one long, inescapable moment. So what does it mean? What do we take away? What pieces will haunt us, hurt us, end us, inspire us? It's just like my mother used to say, the carousel never stops turning. You can't get off. Meredith Gray.
Boom. Shotgun workup. We have Nicole Herman, brain tumor and migraine. Norris Strawn, internal injuries, leg fracture, avulsed spleen. Harriet Strawn, pneumothorax, depressed temporal bone fracture, cerebral spinal fluid leak. Emily Jensen, pregnancy, placenta percreta. Baby Jensen, sacrococcygeal teratoma, anemia, prematurity. Holly Tickner, descending necrotizing mediastinitis. Holy smokes. Oh, that was the dentist girl. Brain abscess. April Jackson's baby, osteogenesis imperfecta. That sounds like a Harry Potter
like a spell.
No, not the osteogenesis, but the imperfecta part.
Imperfecta. Wow.
Rick Schultz, above knee amputation. Jordan Carter, above knee amputation, multifocal hemorrhage, and edema.
Nice job. And then for rounds, thanks, we have Dr. Herman's brain tumor progressing, and then Arizona stealing her scans and bringing those to Amelia. We have Maren Dare still fighting, and then the other shoe dropping with DC. Then we have April and Jackson and their ultrasound. Joe and her confidence in both surgery and then in her relationship with Alex. Then we have Maggie being lonely and her kind of trying to figure out things with Richard, and also kind of Meredith in there, that storyline.
Yep.
And then Amelia's addiction story being shouted in front of the whole hospital, and then Derek's response to that.
Once and then again, just a reminder.
Oh, stop. Oh,
we both went at it. We should have just both kept talking at the same time.
Yeah.
Once again, if you are a $10 patron and you are listening to this in the Patreon app, after we call Time of Death, we're going to be talking about Callie and Owen's story in these episodes with the Veteran Project. So,
yes.
First
notes?
First notes. Yeah, you go first.
I went, oh, this is Derek and Amelia's backstory.
Yes. I said, strange effect. Oh, this is when Derek's dad died. And then I said, this is sad. Do we remind me this? We already know that his dad was shot. This wasn't like a reveal, right? This was like a showing it again.
Yeah. Like, I think this was like, it never showed us it, but like we knew about it. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
I feel like it was early seasons that it gets told, but,
yeah.
Yeah, it was really sad. Also, I can imagine, though, if you forgot that storyline, it'd be very confusing.
Yeah. Was there an airplane outside of your house?
There is one right now.
I heard it over my AirPods. I was like, whoa, what's going on over there?
This microphone's pretty dope. Okay, I was going to ask if we could just start with the Amelia storyline, because sure. I feel like that was most of that first episode, and it was really interesting to me.
Yeah, so I think, okay, so Hattie and Norris come in, which is like fucked
so
up.
So sad.
I said, oh God, this person is holding on to his wife and she is dead. And this is very sad. I don't remember this. And then I was like, oh my God, she's alive. I feel very emotional for these two people. So like in the beginning of the episode, it's a roller coaster of these patients. Like,
right. There's a lot of sad patients at once, I feel like. And also too, I felt really... So Norris, you know, he comes in and like, they're all just trying to pry his wife off of him. And I loved that Meredith is the one that like looks at him and like knows that he needs to hear that she's gone, which like interesting spoiler alert. I feel like doesn't Meredith tell the Penny, is it, or it's the other doctor that worked on Derek. Like you need to tell, like he is dead. Like she needs to hear it. You know, like she makes like, it's just really interesting that like she recognizes that this guy needs to hear it straight up and not be like sweet talked. And that ends up happening to her really soon. So
Yeah. Good. Yeah, that's a good point. My next note is, oh no, who is Sarah? Is she from AA? Which I guess I didn't realize she was from NA, like Narcotics Anonymous. Yes. But this is like one of the most terrible, uncomfortable scenes.
Yeah.
Like moments of someone's life that you could possibly imagine, because you go into these programs knowing that they're confidential, they're anonymous. What you share there stays there. And Sarah ends up recognizing Amelia from NA and says, like, oh my God, you're a doctor. And she realizes that she is working on her parents. And so in front of the whole hospital starts screaming Amelia's story about what happened to her back in private practice, about how she was addicted to narcotics and how her boyfriend OD'd and died. And it's
woke up in bed and dead with her is what, like she said too, like so blunt.
Yeah. Like, and I want another doctor. This isn't okay. And the way Derek looks at Amelia in this moment, it's so disappointing, Derek. Like, no empathy for his sister. Because also, I'm pretty sure Derek knows her story.
Oh, yeah. And at first, he looks at her and you think it's this going to be this look. Like, it's a long look. Like, it starts out and you're like, oh, it's going to be like an empathy look. Or not empathy, but even just like a, like, I'm here for you look. And it turns into this, like, I told you so, like sucks to be you. Like, it turns into this really narcissistic, like, honestly, so terrifying, ugly look. Like, my note is, goddamn, Derek, that face he made. Like, I just, like, it's so obvious.
Yeah. Which then leads into, like, Meredith telling Derek that he needs to take Amelia's side, which I was really proud of Meredith for being, like, being a sister and recognizing, like, this is not Amelia. Like, at this point, Amelia is sober. She hasn't done anything wrong in regards to her job. So, like, you need to be standing up for your sister. But oh gosh, darn it. Sorry, my thing came back on again.
I wonder what you're saying that Siri, I won't say it, thinks that you're speaking.
I don't know. But it's frustrating because I feel like Derek takes this as an opportunity to advance himself and his position and get back to, like, being head of neuro. You know what I mean?
Yes. Right. And I mean, he admits that even. It's crazy because when Hunt approaches him and is like, it's your sister, like, which frustrating that Hunt doesn't just go to Amelia at first, you know, he goes to Derek first and he's like, I would trust you. And Derek just doesn't say anything. He doesn't stand up for her, but he doesn't also condemn her, but he just says nothing, which Hunt interprets as this is not okay. And like, and he interprets the, cause Derek says to him, she's my sister. And Hunt interprets that as like, oh, you don't want to be the one to, you know, condemn her. Don't worry, I hear you clear, and like, I'll have a board meeting. And it's really devastating. And he doesn't redeem himself later when he talks about hitting his rock bottom, but it's like, I'm glad we get to know where he's at mentally, because he's clearly not in a good place. I think one of the scenes in this whole storyline that was really emotional to me was Amelia immediately going to Richard. And also Katarina Scorce, I never know how to say her last name, but the woman who plays Amelia, her acting was so great. Like, her look of pure embarrassment when that woman is going off on her is just so good. And then she goes to Richard, and I love, like, right away Richard asks if she's sober. She says she is. And she didn't disclose her recovery when she was hired because she didn't need to, because Derek hired her. And I love that he just says, you are under no obligation to tell anyone anything more. It's the past and you don't have to defend it. And then she says, but you never get away from it. And he's like, no, you never do. And I just love, though, that he advocates for her. And she ends up doing that exact thing to Hunt. Like, she does not have to disclose all of that to Hunt, and she chooses not to, which is her right. And I just like that Richard empowered her with that. And again, I wish we had more scenes with the two of them, because they're both still addicts, or, you know, recovering addicts. And like, I wish that storyline was touched on more, because I think it's powerful.
Yeah. And I really appreciate that. Like, he makes sure that she knows her rights, like you said, and she doesn't have to say anything. Unfortunately, I think Richard's advice bites her in the ass because Owen's conversation with Derek. So Owen tries to get Amelia to talk with him about like what's going on. And she's pretty much like, I don't have to tell you anything, which I think to Owen makes it look like something is going on because of Derek.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so.
Right, right. It's like the perfect storm.
Yeah, that's frustrating to me too, because she doesn't have to say anything, and she, the past is the past. And, you know, I think her and Owen end up talking a little bit later, and like things go better than that initial conversation. But when that happened, it happens, you know, like right after Owen talks to Derek, and I was like, fuck, Amelia, you look right. like you're trying to hide something.
Right. It's also, so I totally got the order of that confused, but it's the acting in the like moments too, when Derek comes to Amelia, when he realizes mm-hmm. what he's done, when there's the meeting that's been called and Mare kind of calls him out like, well, didn't you say anything? And Amelia, I didn't get to write all of that conversation down, but they're really going at it. And she says to him, you gave me this job and you have abused me since the moment I took it. And you know how her acting, she's like, abused. Like she says it like in mm-hmm. this like deep guttural voice. And I just think it's interesting. Like this is where they're at in their relationship. Derek, as we'll learn and we keep talking, like he goes to DC, he dies soon after that. And all I can think about is like how upset Amelia is, you know, when Mare doesn't tell her that Derek is gone, which I get, but like they were not in a good place. And did they make amends? I'm very anxious to see like if there was a moment of amends with them, because since Amelia has been here full time, it has been ugly between the two of them.
Yeah. You know, I don't remember, but I wrote a note about that too, that Amelia and Derek have a super tough relationship. Like, I think they really love each other, but I mean, there is a lot of competition between the two of them. And Derek clearly is going through some shit and he's taking it out on Amelia. And Amelia is not necessarily in the best place. And she feels very abused by her brother. And I don't know that they ever get that reconciliation, which I can imagine would haunt you the rest of your life if your sibling then died.
Right. And I do feel like this episode gives us the reason why they are problematic. Like they don't get along, and we'll talk about in a moment. But like, I think at least this one gives us a little bit of framework, which then he goes back and he, in the meeting, Derek says to everyone like that the hospital should have protected her. And also all day he's having these flashbacks of, I believe he's having them of the moment that covered his sister's mouth when the person came into the store and literally point blank shot their dad. Mm-hmm. And he like held her mouth shut because she like screamed. And so that the shooter wouldn't hear them. And he says the hospital should have protected her. And more importantly, Derek should have protected her. And yeah, I just like, it's interesting that he seems sort of like out of body because he's like having these flashbacks also at the same time.
Yeah. And he tells the board that like he couldn't do the job any better than Amelia. So,
right, which like is great to say, but it's a little too late. Like you should have said that a long time ago.
Yeah.
Also, does he even really believe that? I don't think he actually believes it. I think he's trying to make amends, but I still think that he thinks he could do it better.
That's a good point. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't believe it.
Right.
But the episode kind of ends where
creepy.
Yeah, like someone's in the dark and it's drinking whiskey. And then I thought it was Meredith coming home, but it's actually Amelia. And honestly, I didn't even really realize she was living there. Like I kind of remember that, but I don't feel like we've talked about that recently.
I think she originally moved in so that, a long time ago, but like so that Derek could do it all, you know, so they could like... they could both have careers. Yeah.
Yeah. And she just like never got her own place. And like he, you know, she moved in to like take over for Derek's thing, whatever. And Amelia tells him like she's moving out. And that's where Derek kind of goes in. Do you have the quote?
I do. First, he says, I've always wanted to protect you, or no, I've always had to protect you since dad died. I didn't want to, but I promised. So, okay, there's resent. He resents the fact that he was put in a position where he had to protect his sister when he was young. And now he still feels like, I don't want to do it, but I promised that I would. And then he says, I don't know who I am anymore. I'm not anyone who I thought I'd be. I try to make the right choices for Meredith, kids, and you, and I'm angry all the time. I'm miserable and I just don't know what to do with it. All I do is hurt people, the last people I want to hurt, and I just can't get control of it. I don't know what to do anymore. And then I love that Amelia, she just looks at him and she says, I know how you feel. We call it rock bottom. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important, like she's been there, and also rock bottom doesn't have to be because you're an addict. Like you can hit rock bottom at any time. And I think Derek thinks he's better than that. Like, I don't, you know, like, I think this is the first time he's realizing that he's not in a good place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he's not like, he's not managing his emotions. Like he's not,
right.
He's not doing a good job at this. He's miserable and he's making everyone close to him in his life miserable at the same time.
Yeah. I really, I mean, this and the next one, it has to be like Derek's low points. And then because he doesn't have much time left, like
no.
It's interesting that they take him so low before he gets written out of this story. I know that was the end of that episode. I have a few little notes on Amelia and Hunt because I forgot that they get married.
I sure do.
I was watching this and there was a couple times, you know, where like music is playing and it's almost like the spark is there. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, oh shit, I forgot that's a storyline and that's probably Hunt's next relationship. So Amelia ends up explaining her story to Hunt and because she says she doesn't care to hang her professional relationships on Derek's recommendations. And Hunt kind of softens to her, which I wish he'd have done in the last episode, and is kind of like, we all have our things. And he kind of talks about like, even I had, you know, my issues, they were different, but you know, similar. And then later Amelia ends up asking Hunt if he has people to talk to. And, she kind of invites him like, if you don't, I'm here, you know? And then I was like, oh shit, they get married. So I don't know. I just totally forgot that.
Yeah. I mean, I just have a note about how she like kind of tells Owen what's up with her addiction. And then, she knows it's a lot keeping her on because she is a risk. And Owen ends up saying, we are all a risk. And then I said, I think this is where they fall in love, question mark.
Right. And it's then, like not romantic.
No, but I do wonder, like, spoiler alert, go ahead 15 seconds. Is this the tumor talking?
The brain.
Is this them falling in love? You know, like...
Also crazy that she's solving Nicole Herman's brain tumor when she probably has hers. What season does Amelia have a brain tumor? Season 14. So it's a couple seasons away, but still crazy. I don't have anything else on Amelia other than I enjoy this storyline. I like this actress and I like Amelia and I'm here for it.
Yeah, I guess the one other thing I will say is like the fact about Owen not having people is like kind of like coming through from like trying to do like a mandate with Owen or whatever, you know, in previous episodes.
Yeah, they're really pushing that.
Yeah, and so, he doesn't like really have much going on in his storyline, I feel like. So I think that's also part of the reason why they had to have like a love interest with him, because otherwise there's... He's not friends with anyone. Like he's nothing. And that's that. Do we want to talk about Dr. Herman's brain tumor in Arizona?
That or Derek? Cause I didn't know cause we were talking about Derek. I'm fine with either.
We can talk about Derek. Yeah. Let's do Derek.
The worst.
So we pretty much end. So we kind of talked about him in the first episode. So I feel like we can talk about more the second episode.
Other than that, Mare and Dare are having sex all night long. We learn in the first one.
Right. And Callie is kind of like, yo, like the other shoe is going to drop. Like that's where that comes in. And Meredith
calls timeouts band-aids.
Yes. And then the second episode starts with that goddamn carousel music again. And it just breaks my heart, that music. And so, you know, like, this is not going to be good between Derek and Mary in that episode. I wrote,
I love this music so much, whatever the muse, I think it's strings, but that, like, the carousel music, I said, it's very nostalgic. And I think that I really like this season because I really love these throwbacks and these, there's so many, not throwbacks, but flashbacks of just just like scenes with Meredith and Derek. There's that one side-by-side scene where it shows them when they first slept together, like in the pilot. And then that look he gave her in the episode last week that we talked about when she was watching the videos of her mom and like how different those looks are. Mm-hmm. Like the look of like, oh my God, you're great. I like, let's hang out more. We just had sex or whatever, to like, I despise you and resent you. And it played that clip again too of Christina, saying that he is not the son you are. I know that was later, but just like the use of flashbacks, I think is so powerful when a show has been on for so long.
Yeah. And just to see like the progression of their relationship and where they're currently at is like, not in a very good place. And to be honest, and like, I think it's both of them. Like, I think Derek, you know, we talk a lot of shit about Derek and I think he deserves all of it. Honestly, his character does. But like towards the end of this episode, like Meredith is not really communicating well either. And she's not, like, no matter what Derek decides to do, whether he decides to stay or leave, you can kind of, because he ends up leaving and we'll talk about that. Meredith is like pissed off either way and upset. And it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know what I mean? So like it's both Derek and Meredith. So I want to be kind of clear about that because we do, you know, talk a lot of shit about Derek, but I think Meredith plays in, it takes two people to be in a marriage, I guess is all I'm saying.
Yes. Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. I mean, she even starts to question that herself when she keeps asking Alex, like, is it a me thing? Like, is this, you know, is this also like something that I'm doing, which I don't want to, we don't have to go in deep about that patient, but, Meredith and Derek are not only butting heads personally, but now professionally on this patient that Maggie asked for a consult. And Derek, they have opposing ideas on what to do with this patient. And it very much is just like a perfect representation of what their, like their lack of communication and understanding in general. Also, the special assistant to the president is visiting Seattle and it doesn't want to take no for an answer. She's very, persuasive and adamant. Yep. And, I love when she ends up sitting down with Derek and she's just like, listen, like, I can't go home until I get a yes from you. I have a dog. I want to get home to my dog. And I loved Derek is like, what kind of dog? And she's like, Springer Spaniel. And he goes, damn it. That's a good dog. And I laughed so hard at that. It was so stupid, but he just looks at her and he's like, damn it. That's a good dog. Like, I don't know. It was
that's
so funny.
Gonna change my mind. That did it right there.
Oh, that he just had his arms crossed. Damn it, that's a good dog. And it made me laugh really hard. But so he sends that lady home again. Meanwhile, again, him and Meredith. Luckily, the patient, like the choice that Maggie and Meredith made, ended up working out all right. Her brain did not do whatever Derek thought it was gonna do. She was fine. But we get back to that same argument of the, like, because you can't be happy here. And he says, I did this for you. I gave up everything for you. And I love that Mary catches on. She goes, you gave up everything. Like that job was everything. I can imagine myself doing the same thing in a fight.
Yeah. And Derek ends up admitting he resents Meredith. I think honestly, like that's really shitty to hear, but I'm like, thank God, like, just like, say it. Like, you're walking around like all pissed off and saying like, you did this, you gave up everything and blah, blah, blah. And like, I want to be with my family. No, be honest about how you're feeling. And for him to finally admit, like, I fucking resent you. Like, at least maybe then we can get to some healing because you're actually telling the truth about what you feel. And so Meredith tells him to take the job. And he calls her the woman with the dog and accepts the position like on the phone in front of Meredith.
It's such a tense moment, like, because she's like practically daring him, you know, like, and he, I feel like they're just both at such heightened emotions in that moment. And he takes that, he hangs up, and she says, go, like she tells him to go. Oh, sorry. That's when so then there's another montage. Okay. There's like carousel. We see lots of clips of Richard walking away from Ellis. We see the clip when Richard says to Meredith, I was jealous, so I ruined it. Mm-hmm. And which I feel like is very much like Meredith is the Richard right now. And then we see the Christina saying he's very dreamy, but he is not the son you are. And Meredith tells him to walk away. And I just, oh my God, I have hiccups because I was talking so fast. I'm not even drinking wine. Take it away for a second. I need to breathe.
I just said like the ending made me very emotional. And I said, God damn it, Mare. Fuck, this is all so sad. And then at my very last note of the episode is, why can't we get off the carousel? Like, because it's so sad because they are both missing each other.
Yes.
So intensely. Like, Derek is pissed at Meredith and he like resents her. And so she's egging him on, like, then take the goddamn job. And he does it. And so that fulfills like exactly what she feared about him. And she is like, he is going to be Richard. And now she's Ellis. And now she's alone. And like, fucking told you so. And like, we can't get off this carousel. There's all these goddamn flashbacks. And like, it's just, it's very, very emotional.
Yeah. And it's weird because it can be interpreted. Like, you can look at it one way where like with that quote from Christina, and it shows again, her watching her mom. Let's see, what's the monologue saying at that point? It's saying something like, it says we're in one place, then another. Yeah. And it all feels like one long inescapable moment. So what does it mean? What do we take away? Which pieces haunt us, hurt us, end us? And when it says inspire us, that's when it shows like that video of her mom accepting the Harper Avery. And it's like, this could be interpreted as like, you know what? Like Meredith doesn't need him. Like he's not the son. Like he didn't want her anyways, but like also showing the Richard thing, like Ellis needed Richard. Like she wasn't happy without him, you know, like she got all of those things, but at what cost? And it's just really, like you said, they're missing each other. And I think life is really hard when people repeat mistakes, mm-hmm. And don't learn from things. And that's what this feels like. Mm-hmm. And good God, do I love, I had full body goosebumps and I freaking love flashbacks. I love the music. I want more of that.
Yeah, totally. It's really sad. It's really sad. Yeah.
It's why I like these seasons though. I feel like they're bringing in the feels. Mm-hmm. So anyways, okay. We can talk about Dr. Herman now. I just wanted to get Derek out of the way, 'cause I felt like there was a lot of emotional baggage there.
For sure. So in the beginning of the first episode, Arizona has a lot of questions about the brain tumor. And Dr. Herman ends up saying that, like, she is not entitled, Arizona is not entitled to her brain tumor, but she is entitled to her knowledge and all of the things that she has to teach her about, like, neonatal surgery. And so it's kind of setting the precedent, like, shut the fuck up about the tumor. Either you get on board with this and you learn from me, or, like, you don't get to be around, I feel like.
Right. I love the quote. She said, the chance to take my work into your future, which I think is just really huge because yeah, it's going to be Arizona that takes this and expands on it and like gets published for it and all these things, you know?
Yeah. And so then, I mean, I guess it's kind of important. There's this patient that Dr. Herman has been working with and the baby has a thing and then like it's going wrong, whatever. And so Arizona is trying to get a hold of Dr. Herman like all day because she's like, I think we need to do an emergency C-section. And Dr. Herman is not responding. And so Arizona ends up making the call to do a C-section and ends up leaving a voicemail for Dr. Herman saying like, and when I'm done with this, I'm telling like Chief Hunt that,
yep,
like what is going on with you? It's a very tragic story with the mother. Yeah. she has...
She leaves him with Grant, or her with Graham, the other like assistant. And you just know something's going to go wrong when they make a point for it to be like, are you sure you got this? And he's like, oh yeah, I've done closed a C-section, you know, whatever. Like, you just know. And so she leaves to go with Alex and work on the baby. That scene when she comes back and Graham is freaking out and the blood is everywhere. Oh,
it's really, it was like, I was like, oh my God, that woman is bleeding out. Like, what the fuck?
She lost like 8 liters. Also, I wrote, aren't you normally awake for a C-section? Like, don't you start out that way? I was like, I hope they put her, gave her some anesthesia.
She probably passed out, honestly. And then I was just like, where the fuck is Dr. Herman? And she ends up, the mother ends up dying. And Arizona, like, had come in, and Arizona's pregnant, and, you know, they lose the mother.
April's pregnant.
Oh, I'm sorry. April. Yeah. Yeah. And then, I always mess those two up. And then, we're like, where is Dr. Herman? And then Arizona has to go tell the husband what happened. And Dr. Herman is already there talking with the husband. Which then leads into Dr. Herman and Arizona going to the, like the lounge, and Dr. Herman walks into the bathroom. She vomits. She's looking very clammy and sick. It's not good. We find out that Dr. Herman had to have like immediate radiation, and has been like, it hit her really hard, and she has been monitoring Arizona all day, and that she did everything right. And even if she had done things like differently, done the procedure that Dr. Herman had wanted to do, like, it would have maybe like given them more time, but they still, the mother probably still wouldn't have caught that she had like placenta, what was it? Like placenta preta, or whatever.
Right.
She would have died anyway. And that's when Arizona decides that she's not going to tell Chief Hunt about Dr. Herman's brain tumor, because she wants to know how to do the procedure that Dr. Herman was going to do on the baby that day.
Right. Like, I feel like that pushed her into being like, okay, I want this knowledge. It's worth the risk. Like, let's move forward with this.
Yeah. Because she says, like, if there was any chance that I could have saved that mother, like, I want to know how to do that.
Right.
So after all of this happens, Arizona ends up, and we'll kind of talk about like everyone being at Krebs, Meredith's old place. Yeah. But Arizona ends up showing up and moves in with Karev because she has nowhere to be, which is just sad too. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she has nowhere to be. She's like struggling with her doctor person, and, you know,
right,
that she's studying under. And so, yeah, that's like kind of how that first episode ends. I don't know if you have anything else about that.
Wait, that's how the first one ends?
Yeah.
Why don't I have any notes on that?
Yeah. We'll kind of talk about that with Maggie in that round and how they all get there. But if you don't have any...
Oh, wait. I do see it. Yeah. Okay, sorry. I do have that. Yeah. So I think it's nice that he like does that, and awkward that Callie's there, but they get over it clearly. Mm-hmm. Beer helps, I think. And then, so the next episode starts, and... Arizona is like pestering Dr. Herman again about the tumor, because I think she's just wondering. And we learn that Dr. Herman is divorced and does not have kids. Mm-hmm. And so she has just her career. And then the next scene, well, she gets kicked out of the surgery because Dr. Herman's like, your head is not in the game. Quit thinking about my tumor. Like, you're not going to do this surgery. And in that in between time, Arizona's curiosity gets the best of her. She calls the neuro people at whatever other doctor and says that on behalf of Dr. Shepherd, she is needing Dr. Herman's scans. And she first tries to get Alex to do it. And then he's like, fuck no, I'm not doing this. And she ends up calling them and getting them back, which, like, oh my God, the like sweat I would have of like making that phone call.
I said, why in the fuck would these people release these records without a signed HIPAA like release?
Who knows?
Like that is, it doesn't matter if I at my job call a different chiropractic office and I say, hi, this is Dr. So-and-so, or I'm calling on behalf of this doctor and we need you to send over all this person's records. They cannot even confirm that they saw that person until they get a records release. Like,
right, right.
It bothered me, but whatever. That's
not realistic for sure. Also then when she goes to like collect them, Amelia's holding them and she's like, is this our Nicole Herman? And she's so like, doop, 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 when she says it in Arizona, they look at them together. Look, and there's like that. I love that room where they look at all the scans with like all of the x-ray light things, you know, and they like put them up all over. I feel like it's very like, reminds me of like Homeland when, yeah. when Carrie would have all the things hanging up. Also funny comical moment, but it's like part of the storytelling. So when Arizona walks in on, Dr. Herman and Graham banging in the, was are they in a closet?
I think they were in the on-call room. Yeah.
Okay. I loved Arizona's reaction. It was like perfect. It was like, oh, oh. And then it was like when you shake your head and you're just like, holy shit.
Like I didn't want to see that. I also love just to like take it back. There's a quote, something that Dr. Herman says in the very beginning of the episode. Like Arizona cannot get over the fact, like she's focusing so much on Dr. Herman's brain tumor that she gets kicked out of the surgery. But Dr. Herman says, I have work, you and Graham. And then she says, wow, that is the saddest thing I've ever said. Like that's
she's funny.
What she has in her life.
Like I think I'm like going to be sad when these episodes are over because I really enjoy these. Like this storyline just does it for me. I don't know why. But, and then obviously Arizona talks to Graham and is like questioning him, like, what's she been like? Like, you know, why is she sleeping with you? And he's kind of just like, I don't know, like, why not? You know, whatever. And Graham obviously tells Dr. Herman that Arizona was talking about that, which is again, like such a privacy, like stay out of it. I mean, she thinks that her sleeping with Graham is a side effect of the brain tumor. And I love that Herman puts her in her place and it's like, what you saw was not a symptom of a tumor. It was a symptom of dying soon. Like I would like to have, she's like describes Graham, I forget, but it's like a good body, like kind of dumb, but like good body. And like, she just wants some orgasms.
Which is fair. Don't we all
yep.
just want some orgasms?
But the damage has been done. She showed Amelia the scans and we know Amelia and she is motivated.
Yeah. So it ends with like Amelia calling Arizona down to the homeland room.
The room where it happens.
Yeah. And you know, everything's up and Arizona's all stressed out about it. And Amelia kind of tells her to shut up and she thinks that she can remove Dr. Herman's tumor. Which also earlier, I can't remember if we talked about this, but when Amelia sees the scans, she's just like, this is like a fucking beautiful tumor. You know, like so
yeah, she's
blown away by it. And then ends up in the end of the episode being like, I think I can take care of this. So.
Yep. Crazy. So it leaves us with a cliffhanger of that, which obviously for her to do that, she's going to have to know that Arizona saw her scans. It's going to be a big blow up.
Yes. Should we go into April and Jackson? Because I feel like that kind of has to do with Dr. Herman.
Yeah, sure. So we learn in the first one that they don't want to know the sex of the baby.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's also a really sweet scene. So also April works on that woman that ends up dying, the woman who had the baby with all bloody. Jackson is in a surgery. I forget which one. And Derek is like, yeah, well, you know, I wasn't worried too, but then I didn't know Meredith was going to be operated on by an intern in the dark. And he's like, that's not making me feel better. And so there's these like moments of fear. And I loved like Jackson and April get together at the end of the day and they're sitting on the bench outside and I actually really loved this scene. I thought it was a really good picture of what a couple who has different beliefs but respects each other's beliefs could look like, which like they've come really far mm-hmm. in that. And Jackson is just like, how are you not worried? And you know, she like believes that it's all in God's hands. And I love that she says, we don't get to know the answers. Like to me, that's a really great definition of faith, like just the acceptance of like, you don't get to know. And that's that. She feels at peace. And then I love that they both don't understand how each other goes through the world in the, like, with the belief system that they have. I think that that's really telling about them. And, I don't know if like they'd be able to last like that, obviously, but I think it's a great moment of where they both respect each other and aren't trying to push something on the other one.
Yeah. I feel like that was the moment where I wrote a note and I said, I just feel really sad that Jackson and April didn't end up working out. Like,
right.
I feel like they're in a really good space right now, which is really sad because of what's about to happen. So they're just both really excited about having a baby and they're married and they're both working really hard and, you know, respecting each other's differences. And then it all goes to fucking shit. But in the second episode, Stephanie ends up doing the ultrasound for Arizona, which is awkward
for itself.
Oh, God damn it. I don't know why I do that. I do that all the time. Okay. For April Kepner. I'm going to call her Kepner.
There you go. There you go.
She ends up doing the ultrasound for Kepner, and which is awkward in itself because we know Stephanie and Jackson's background. And tells Stephanie, like, don't, you know, say the sex. And then Stephanie ends up saying he.
He's breached.
He's breached. And then, and it's funny because Kepner, like, doesn't really realize it because then she, like, says the pronoun he, and then she kind of is like, God damn it. Like, why? I told you I didn't want to know. And she's like, I didn't say that. I didn't do that. But we find out that the baby is sitting like a little Buddha and says that he was sitting like that last time, which Stephanie then pulls up previous ultrasound images and is like, we're not done here. And Kepner is like, yeah, we are. And that's when we realize, like, oh, Stephanie is finding something out about the baby.
Right. Yeah. And it's just like, it's just so sad. I did appreciate, like, so, you know, Stephanie has this assumption and then she takes it to Arizona to confirm first. And then Arizona, like, who can't believe it either and is just so sad, takes it to Dr. Herman, because she just, like, needs someone else to confirm it. And I like, appreciate the care that they're taking, you know, to make sure that they're telling them the most accurate thing. But it's also really complicated because now three people in the hospital know what's happening to their baby before they do. And we learn that the baby has this genetic problem that we spoke of, and like their bones they break in utero. And if they make it all the way to full term, they don't usually live more than a few days, hours, or maybe a week. Mm-hmm. And I so Arizona's asking Dr. Herman, like, what can I do for her? Like, there has to be something I can do for her. And all Dr. Herman says is be there for her, which is like, that means, you know, there's nothing that can be done. It's just so hard being the viewer. It's weird when a show puts you in a position where you know something before the person does, you know, and you're just like, and so, and then there's that horrible scene at the end where,
well, but even before that, Stephanie runs into April and, and she says that she's, oh gosh, my stupid thing came on again. She ends up, April says, like, I forgive you for, like, it's, I'm actually happy that I know, like, whatever, you know, about the sex of the baby. And then, Stephanie ends up hugging April and she says, I'm sorry. And April kind of thinks like she's saying sorry for announcing the sex of the baby. And she's kind of like, well, that's weird. But we know that Stephanie's actually sorry for what she's going to have to tell them. And so then, so Stephanie is talking with Dr. Herman one more time about the scans and just confirming everything. And Dr. Herman says, like, it's really quite a shame. It's really sad. Like, oh, this is such a cute baby. It looks like a little Buddha. And as she says that, the elevators are opening and Jackson is in the elevator and he hears this, which he knows is about his baby. And he's like, what is going on. And
yeah,
it's
ugly.
And it's terrible because number one, we don't get to see what happens and we know that's going to come in future episodes. But number two, like Jackson clearly knows that something's very wrong. And because she's talking to Dr. Herman about it, you know?
Right. My thought is the next episode is going to start like with that scene. Like it's going to not time jump at all. You know, it's going to just be like that moment. Yeah. Sad. So it's sad. And that was our last moment of April and Jackson really happy. And it's just going to be really sad. So, okay, we are going to keep chugging along because we have a lot to talk about still. Let's talk about Joe. There's not too much to say other than that it's really interesting that throughout, in the first episode, there's the lunch scene when they're all hanging out. I'm talking about Joe and Alex, then I'll go into her and her first surgery, but like there's the lunch scene. She's not sitting by Alex. There's the end when Arizona arrives and like all of Alex and his buddies are all in the room and like Joe is like off into the office. I think she's just feeling like, well, she definitely is feeling insecure about like Alex and Meredith's relationship and where does she fall in this? And is she still important? And everyone's always living in this house. And I thought it was our house. And I just love that Alex just says the house was always open. Even when Mare hated me, I could be there. Like, and then like, he's basically says to her, like, the house will always be open. That's the way it is. That's the way that house is. And he says, you in my bed and Meredith in my bed are two very different things.
Yeah.
And I just love that idea of that house always being a haven, which it continues to be for like anyone that needs it.
Yeah. And I love that he's like, yeah, the house stays open. But even before that, I mean, she's struggling like with surgery. She pukes and Stephanie's kind of giving her shit about it. Like, you're really nervous or you're pregnant. And then she ends up like saying, calling Dr. Bailey, little bitty. And then Dr. Bailey walks out of the stall and she's like, I can't. You know, can you get me the soap for my little bitty hands? And Joe, or like turn on the faucet, and Joe goes to do it. And she whacks her hands like, get the fuck away. And then Joe thinks she fucks up the surgery. And Bailey ends up saying like, comes in and was like, the patient never made it to CT. And then, you know, kind of is screwing with Joe. And ultimately, it's like a teaching moment of like, stop second guessing yourself. Like, you do that too much. You did all of the things right in that solo surgery. And I'm not going to be here all the time to like,
right,
tell you that you did a good job. And so I think that just right, kind like, of,
yeah,
I think that like is a thread through her life. It's not just surgery, but it's her like relationship with Karev, and she's second guessing all these things. And she just needs to be confident in the fact that like, in her relationship with Karev, in her job and in surgery, because she is competent in all these things.
Yes, I think so too. And really mean of Bailey to do it that way.
Oh yeah. I mean, classic, like that was a mean Bailey teaching moment, but I think it needed to be done.
That was cool. Yeah, for sure. And then in our last roundout before we get into post-op, we have Maggie's storyline and how things are going with Richard. And I'm really loving Maggie on the rewatch. I think that things are, well, at first I was like, things are very like in black and white for her. And when Mare's like, I'm sorry, like we lost track of time. Are you still mad at me? And at first she's like, no, like stop asking. And at first I was like, oh, she really isn't mad. She's just annoyed that like people keep asking her about it. But then like, turns out she is upset. And I loved that scene when Mare is sitting underneath her on the bunk bed, she's on top. And Maggie finally comes clean and she says, you invited me to dinner and then didn't come to dinner, which when you put it like that, it's like the worst. She says she just wanted to have dinner and with people and conversation. She's sad and lonely and scared she's going to get a cat.
I love that. Yeah. She's scared she's going to get a cat.
She's even like, she's like, the Richard thing is whatever. Like, I was willing to put up with him in order to have conversation and hang out with people and make friends. And I think it's really great that she was honest with Mare about that, because they, you know, they save Norris and Hattie together. They have kind of like a bonding moment. And then she invites her over to Alex's house, which it's funny. At first she's like, are you free then? And she's like, well, I was going to catch up on some reading. And then Maggie realizes like, oh shit. Yeah, no, I'm free. Let's hang out. And I just love that they're like drinking beer and it's Maggie's first time seeing the house where Ellis lived.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that like, Well, I don't love this, but like she was just really excited to that someone invited her to dinner, and she was like sick of talking back to the television and all these things. And then I love that they go to Krev's and like everyone is talking about how they're all related through sex. Yeah. And they're like pouring one out for George and stuff. And like, like not quite a part of any of that, but like is being included. And I think it's really special. And like you said, it like transitions into them in the next episode, like being on each other's side.
Yes. Which like was Mare working against Derek? Was it more than that? But I do think that a barrier has been broken between them.
Yeah.
And we're going to continue to see that happen, which is great. Same with Richard is making forward motion in the next episode. He and Bailey are having lunch and Bailey says to him, among other things, you're going to pull a muscle. Your left eye is going to pop out of your head because he's like staring at Maggie and he doesn't want to interfere, but instead he's just staring. And I feel like Richard jumps in on so he gets asked by Derek to consult, which like, is Derek asking that so he can get someone else on his side? Does he really want Richard's consult? It's left to be whatever, but Richard ends up siding with Derek, which is going against his two daughters essentially. And I was like, does he know he's getting into a family meddling issue? Like, I don't know that he did.
No, I don't think so.
And then there's this sweet moment at the end when Maggie approaches Richard and asks, like, why did you side with Derek? And he gives this really great answer that he does this, like, he goes down this list of things that he assesses the risk of, like a factor for with the patient, and he does it quickly and he comes to a conclusion based on that. And she's like, well, do you have it written down? He's like, no, I do it in my head. And she's like actually impressed with that and wants to learn. And Richard offers to have coffee with her in the morning and she's like genuinely excited for it. I think more about like the medical learning, but either way, the way Richard smiles when she walks away is really sweet because I think it's like a step forward for him and her.
Yes, totally.
So hopefully that can keep going up. Before we leave and do post-op, do you have random notes? I have a couple.
I have one where Callie says, I can imagine throwing my wife out a window, which I think is funny.
Yeah, like not not saving her out a window, but actually just throwing her out a window.
Yeah.
I have a sinus flap is worse than a brain flap. Don't like that.
Yeah. I have the part where Arizona asks Callie if she's okay. She's really struggling. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in post-op about Callie. But Arizona ends up asking if Callie misses her at all. And she says, of course. And then Arizona says, just not enough. And that's kind of sad.
Yeah, they kind of have like a timeout moment where they both sit by each other and just like tell each other, like, you'll figure it out. And like have a moment where they're just not mad at each other anymore, which is nice.
Yeah.
If only life were that. I have one note just on to update on the storyline that we dislike about Bailey and her health. She is really short. I think it's with Richard and she says, sorry, kale rage talking. And I was like, oh, maybe she should eat more. She's not being nourished. Diets are stupid.
Yeah. She's bored with kale smoothies, walking upstairs and hearing Richard talk about Maggie pretty much. And every time she sips that fucking kale smoothie, she's like, gross. It's like, don't fucking drink it because it doesn't taste good to you. So don't do it. Bailey, you're better than that.
I love that Richard's like, that looks like bile.
Yeah.
Like he uses the word bile.
Yeah, because it's fucking gross. Well, before we get into post-ops, we have to do notes and trivia.
Yes, we do. Want to just alternate?
Yes.
You should do this first note. You're going to like
this episode title originated from the song Could We Start Again, Please? Originally from Jesus Christ Superstar by Andrew Lloyd Webber.
This episode scored 8.36 million viewers.
Filming was scheduled from September 30th to October 11th, 2014.
This episode is often mistakenly called Can We Start Again, Please? This was thought to be episode's title until the writer tweeted the correct line. I think this is part of the same thing. On Netflix, the wrong title is used.
This episode uses the same Derek and Amelia flashbacks from Who We Are.
Goof. The hernia surgery that Joe does as her first solo surgery is not technically her first. In season 9 premiere, Going, Gone, Joe was chosen for a solo appendectomy, her first solo surgery of her intern class. However, she did not complete the surgery as she ripped open the cecum in panic, leading to Meredith stepping in to finish the procedure. The surgery was therefore the first solo surgery that she completed without help, start to finish.
And another goof. When Owen and Amelia talk at the OR board, we can see that there is a surgery called an epigastric hernia repair scheduled. Epigastric is misspelled and likely is supposed to say epigastric.
What a goof. Next so episode. This episode's title originated from the song Risk, originally sung by Deftones.
It scored 8.33 million viewers.
Filming for this episode was scheduled October 10th to October 23rd, 2014.
Kimberly Hebert Gregory, who portrays Deborah Curzon, is in this episode, originally played a mother in an earlier episode of the season. However, her scenes were cut from that episode. But since the writers and production crew liked the actress so much, they asked her to come back to portray Deborah. The deleted scenes featuring the character she originally played are featured on the season 11 DVD.
Interesting. Meredith's voiceover states the carousel never stops turning and that you can't get off. Ironically, the carousel shown has a sign saying that you're only allowed to get off when the carousel stops. That's deep. And the carousel never stops turning, but you can't get off until it stops.
In the final scene, Meredith remembers significant experiences in her life. For example, we can go back and forth. How she watched a videotape of her mother in Only Mama Knows.
Her farewell to Christina in Fear of the Unknown.
Her first day at the hospital in A Hard Day's Night.
The bomb in A Patient and It's the End of the World as We Know It.
The cancellation of Christina's wedding and Didn't We Almost Have It All.
How she almost drowned in Drowning on Dry Land.
The shooting rampage in Death and All His Friends.
The plane crash in Flight.
And how she built the House of Candles for Derek in Freedom Part 2.
Oh, my favorite episode. The idea of making April and Jackson's baby sick was pitched by Sarah Drew herself. Therefore, she's really committed to the storyline. Wow.
Okay. This was one of Gina Davis's favorite episodes to guest star in.
This episode ends on November 14th. Cool.
cool. All right. Catherine Fox Award.
Okay, I didn't write my nomination, but I do have one.
Okay, go ahead.
My nomination is Amelia.
Oh, that's good.
Because she didn't, she went to a meeting, we learned, before Derek approaches her. You know what I mean? So, like, mm-hmm. she had that horrible thing happen to her, and yet she, like, stuck to her guns and then stood up for herself to her brother and then to Hunt later on.
I think that's good. I said no one. And then I said maybe Karev for offering his house to Arizona, being there for Joe, being there for Mayor, having his shit together, keeping the house open.
Yeah, he did that successful surgery on the baby too. And I do love the idea of like him keeping the tradition of the house. Yeah. You know?
But I do like Amelia. I think she should get it. So
I'm going to be bold in my rating.
Okay, great.
I'm giving it a 9 out of 10 because I felt GGBs. I had full body chills, which GGBs are grays, goosebumps, if anyone didn't know. I don't know. I really liked it.
Okay, well, I originally gave it a 7 out of 10, but after talking about it, I'm going to give it an 8.
Ooh.
There's a lot going on in it. It just makes it, like, it's just really sad. Everything's really sad in these episodes. So I think that's why I gave it a 7, because I was in a really bad mood last night. But I'm going to give it an 8 tonight. So there we go.
I love it. Love when it raises. So, Bree, would you do the honor of calling Time of Death? And also to our listeners, again, if you want to hear us talk about the next storyline, just become a $10 patron and your Patreon episode will have the extended version.
You do have to listen to that on Patreon.
Yes.
Unless you put it in your feed. That gets confusing. Whatever. Just do it. Just become a patron. Anyway, yes, I would love to call Time of Death. Time of Death, Abby, is 2051.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.